This episode of Gareth Jones on Speed was recorded in Milan, in Italy. And once again, it's about motorbikes. Hello, welcome to Gareth Jones on Speed. I'm Gareth, and like I said, I'm in Milan. I'm visiting EICMA, the Exposition Internazionale Ciclo e Motociclo e Accessorio, I think something like that, which means the International Exhibition of Motorbikes, Bikes and Accessories, Europe's biggest motorbike show. Not something I knew very much about, because I'm from the car world, but I'm here to see the new Nortons being launched. If you've listened to the last two episodes of On Speed, you'll know that I went to India to meet TVS, a massive Indian company who 5 years ago bought an ailing Norton. Norton have struggled over the years a number of times. They've sort of gone bust and been bought up and then brought back from the dead and gone bust. Well, now they've had 200 million... I'm not sure if it's dollars or quid invested in them by TVS to build a new factory in Solihull, where they're going to build a new range of exciting Norton bikes. But I don't have to wait till tomorrow to see it at EICMA, because I've been invited to a press preview at a venue called Garage 21 here in Milan, a kind of a event venue, I suppose it is, very posh, and on display, whilst we all sip wine waiting for the show to start to tell us about the new bikes, there are four classic Nortons on display. Don't ask me to tell you what they are. I can recognise one of them is a Manx, and I think the other one might be a Commando. One of them might be a Commando. And then there's a bike from the very dawn of Norton here, that kind of motorcycle assisted bicycle, when that's what motorbikes were back then. So the new bikes, what are they going to do? Are they going to recall Norton's heritage? Are they going to look like British bikes of the 1950s, 60s, 70s or even 20s? Almost certainly not, because I would imagine TVS are rebooting Norton. They're going to launch four bikes here today, I believe. A Manx R... an Atlas, and an Atlas, is it called the GT? Another version of the Atlas. That's all I know. I've seen no pictures. I've seen an outline of one of the bikes, a kind of a silhouette, but no more than that. So what is new Norton going to be like? Is it going to draw on the heritage of that name, or is it a full reboot, new logo, new bike, new idea, forget everything that you knew about Norton before, because this is Norton now? Well, I'm about to find out, because I think in about 5 minutes the show begins and we get to see what the new bikes are. And quite frankly, I'm genuinely excited. I really am. It's had a big build-up for me, because my relationship with Norton started when TVS said, hey, do you want to come to India and find out about the company you've just bought, Norton? And I initially thought, when I was going over there, I might get to see some new Nortons, but I didn't. So in the two programs that I've done so far on motorbikes alluding to the rebirth of Norton, we haven't actually seen any bikes from Norton. Seen lots of TVS bikes, and they were great. So if you take the clout of the fourth biggest bike manufacturer in the world, who TVS are, and apply that to a brand that so many people value, then there might be something really viable here. Pretty sure it will be more than viable. I think it's going to be genuinely exciting. The audience of some 50 invited journalists from all around the world were treated to a presentation of the new Norton range by the major players in the company. And finally, the four bikes were revealed, and they looked great. Got a warm round of applause. probably much to the relief of the management. After the reveal, I sat down with one of those guys, Simon Skinner, a good black country fella who's head of design for Norton. Simon, thank you very much for the invite out here. How are you feeling about the launch of these four bikes? You've been nervous?
Yeah, I am. Of course I'm nervous, and it's super exciting. You know, this is something I've worked towards for 17 years nearly. Yeah. I mean, everyone's, since the TVS acquisition, has worked for 5 years, but really, this is a lifelong journey almost for me.
And it is an utter reboot of Norton, isn't it?
Yeah, 100% it is. And, you know, we've tried to retain the DNA of Norton in terms of innovation and forward-looking and being modern, and then reinterpreted it for 2025 and made it relevant for today.
And it starts with the logo. You've got a new logo. That's controversial, isn't it?
It depends how you look at it. It could be controversial, but I like to say we're telling the story in six letters, because the logo is still instantly recognisable as the Norton logo.
Yeah.
We've retained the DNA, but we've executed in a thoroughly modern and relevant way.
I think you've got to do that, because my generation, I'm 64, I was around for a large part of the Norton story, not the early days, but people 20 years, 40 years younger than me, who are the largest purchaser of motorcycles at the moment, they won't know the Norton backstory. They will know that it stands for something, but they won't know what. So the idea that you've approached this as a complete reboot, re-identifying what Norton was about, is important and the right thing to do, in my view. How techie are the bikes? You listed some of the software on the bikes. Mm-hmm. A lot of that stuff, is that TVS code? Because some of that stuff you can get on TVS much lesser bikes. Or is it completely original, different code?
No, it's everything's bespoke to Norton, pretty much. But you're absolutely right. And in terms of customers from, or people from 20, 30, 40 years ago, or younger people not knowing the brand, we just have to tell the story.
Yeah.
And what made Norton famous historically was innovation. And sometimes that innovation came out on the racetrack.
Yeah.
Sometimes it was an isoelastic suspension. Sometimes it was a rotary engine. Sometimes it was a featherbed frame.
Yeah.
But the consistency right from day one is that of innovation. And innovation in 2025 is different to what it was in 1959. That's what it is. It's different. It's colours, it's material, it's how we execute the design, how we sell the bike to a customer. And, of course, the technology used. So, as you say, some of the technology is really high-end. Really high end.
Tell me about that. You've got kind of anti-dive, you've got ABS, you've got IMUs that respond to lean angle when you're using traction control. I mean, this is stuff of the future, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it is. I mean, we talk about innovation all the time, and you know, my role within the business is to give the innovation from an aesthetic point of view, from a touch and feel point of view, and it's Brian that gives it from a technology point of view. But we have to work together, because what you understand is every one of those pieces of technology has a piece of hardware, has a control unit. We have a control unit for the keyless ignition, a control unit for the suspension, a control unit for the bodywork, a control unit for this, and we have to package all that on the bike. So we have to work really hand in hand, myself and Brian, to ensure we package all those components. They meet all the requirements technically, but also complement the design. And that integration is key to what we're doing. And if it wasn't for that, we wouldn't be able to achieve what we've achieved here.
Which is a very high-performance bike in terms of the Manx, and the Manx are. Mm-hmm. 1200cc V4 produces how much brake horsepower and how much torque?
206 horsepower and 130 newton metres. But it's the numbers are the numbers, but what's important is the way it produces the power. And if you look at our power curves, we're the most powerful bike in class, up to 11,000 RPM. And then we've got the most torque out of everybody everywhere.
How do you achieve that?
Oh, that's a bit of a technical question. It's one for Brian. But if you're asking me, it's about engine capacity, obviously. And then the technology within the engine. So we've got a 72-degree V, which is similar to the old engine, but that's where the similarities end. It's been engineered right from the ground up. So the bike, genuinely, we looked at how a customer would use it, who our customer is, and then broke it down to the ground and built it back up again from both the design and engineering perspective.
I was interested to hear that the vast majority of motorcyclists don't get anywhere near the end of the rev range where most bikes produce most of their torque. And you've engineered a bike to produce its torque a pretty flat curve from low down. That's for usability, right?
It is. And don't forget, bizarrely, we're less constrained than everyone else because we're not super bike racing.
Uh-huh.
So when you look at the competitor set, they're pretty much produced to go super bike racing and win super bike races. And we don't have those handcuffs. So what we can do is, again, break it down and build it back up again to what our customer actually uses. And as Brian said, it genuinely surprised us. You've got these very, very fast riders on very fast roads or racetracks, and still only 1% of the time they use over 8,000 RPM, which you almost beggars belief.
Yeah. You've actually tailored a bike for use,
yeah,
as opposed to a top trumps bike, you might say, with maximum rev, maximum torque, yeah, you know, all that. Usability, this is, forgive me, this is where Norton may have fallen down over recent years.
Yeah, for sure.
How do you address that? How do you fix that? You throw everything away and start from scratch is what you've done, isn't it?
But by and large, and don't forget, we've got a company owner now in TVS with a big vision, with a bank balance and with lots of experience. And we've got these headline figures like £200 million invested. But what's not included and what you don't see is they've taken all their top people as well, some of the great finance people, quality people, uh-huh, purchasing people, uh-huh, and placed them within Norton and relocated them and their families to the UK to help us. So they're sort of the unsung heroes in the background, if I'm honest.
It's a really international team. You've got, mm-hmm, Germans, Indians, Italians, yep, Brits. I dare say French and more Italians working on the bike as well.
Yeah, I mean, my design team, in terms of pure creatives, our design team is twice the size of Ducati's.
Really?
So what you're seeing today is the tip of the iceberg. I've got very talented French designers. I've got very talented Italian designers, British designers. So we are a very international team. But what we do is we go where the talent is and we get the talent because that's what we need. So if we want world-class bikes, we need world-class people.
Yeah, yeah. The Manx and the Manx are, mm-hmm, arguably the sort of bike you might expect from Norton, ultimate performance. Mm-hmm. But the Atlas and the Atlas GT, that's arguably dipping into somewhere where Norton hasn't been for the last, what, 15 years, maybe 20 years?
Yeah, maybe even more. You know, we've got history with bikes for touring, whether it's a Commando Interstate, whether it's the Atlas. We've got, whether it's the P11 even going off-road, we've got lots of history. And there's very few places our brand can't take us. So why wouldn't we do that kind of bike? Why wouldn't we apply our design strategy to a middleweight adventure bike? The brand allows us to go to those places because the brand is so strong. And that's what's kept me here for so long.
Did you at any point during the development of these bikes consider a rotary engine? Because you have in the past.
Not really, no.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, again, it's about emissions. It's about scalability. It's about all the things. And if you knew what we had to do to make a bike legal these days, it's scary stuff. You know, we get Euro 5 Plus. We're about to go to Euro 6 at some time in the future. And then we've got all the reliability targets, which, to be honest, are insane from TVS. So in terms of reliability, their test plan and the way they conduct quality control is out of this world.
Yeah, I saw it firsthand. I was in the factory, mm-hmm, 2 weeks ago, and it's world class. It was immaculate. It was like visiting a laboratory, not a factory. And I would imagine that your factory in Solihull is another level above that, right? Because these are top-end bikes.
Yeah, well, it's got the same philosophy behind it. You know, Richard talked about quality, 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 and that extends to all different parts of the factory and our processes and how we do things. So, yeah, the TVS factory is quite a place and quite an eye-opener when you go there. The volume of bikes they build, but in the way they build them, you could genuinely eat your dinner off the floor.
Yeah.
And that philosophy is continued back at Solihull in the UK. And again, as I talked about, some of the people there, the world-class people that have come from TVS to Solihull to help us set the factory up, and that's where that comes from.
And the motors on both of these bikes, they're two separate engineering designs. There is no relationship between either of them at all. Any relationship with TVS motors at all, either of the bikes?
No, it's bespoke for Norton,
really?
At the moment. Yeah. So, it's developed for us. And again, that's the power of TVS, isn't it? So they've got the huge engineering capability, the resource and the backing to be able to do this.
And if you were going to have one of the four bikes on display today, difficult choice, which one would it be and why?
Okay, well, I'm getting on in years and I ache more than I used to. So If I think I was going to park one in the living room, it would be a Manx R. If I wanted to go out the weekend, it would be a Manx. If I wanted to go out for a week, it would be an Atlas.
Right, so you'd have all three of the four.
I'd have three of the four.
I like the modernity of the bikes. I like the way that they're not modern retro bikes. It's a 22nd century bike, I said to Richard earlier on.
Yeah.
The future is unwritten for Norton. What's next after these bikes? Can you give me any indication what you'd like to do?
Well, what I'd like to do is what I am doing, you know, because I'm really lucky in the fact that we've got so much freedom from a design perspective. Sudarshan, who owns the business, has, I wouldn't say given us a free hand, but he certainly wants us to move the bookends in terms of design and use design to push the company forwards and push the vision forwards. So that's what we're doing. And it does feel like the handcuffs have very much come off. And I do feel less constrained than I would be at any other business. So what we're doing next, again, what you've seen today is the tip of the iceberg.
We're in trouble. Will you move down market? Will there be, you know, 250 size bikes? Will there be A2 class bikes in future Nortons?
Well, we'll never be down market. We'll always be very premium, very luxury in whatever category we choose. But, you know, we need to make Norton accessible for everybody because it's such a great brand.
And how many bikes do you need to build and sell to keep the brand afloat, or will TVS buffer that for a few years?
No, I mean, as a business, we need to stand on our own two feet at some point. But the good thing about TVS, again, I'm singing their praises a little bit, but it's all genuine.
Yeah.
And they're not like some companies where it's, I need an exit strategy in 3 years and how much money can I make? It's very much a long-term view, and I think that's a very Indian view, which is phenomenal for us. And it does feel like Norton's secure. You know, I talk about Norton being famous for three things. It's innovative motorcycles, racing the TT and going bust.
But, yes.
But the, you know, Norton first went bankrupt in 1913, but it feels like it's home and it's got stability and security, which it's never had. Fast forward 20, 30, 40 years and look at the history books about Norton, and this is probably the most significant time in its 100-plus year history because we've got stability.
Interesting. It's analogous to Jaguar Land Rover when Ratan Tata invested so heavily in Land Rover and allowed it to become the brand it wasn't under Ford. And you've got a very similar situation. Plus, Jerry McGovern is involved as more than a consultant on Norton. What's his role?
Yeah, I mean, Jerry and I go back a few years now, and he's been not only advisor to the business, but a mentor to me personally as well, personally and professionally. So while he wouldn't sit there and say, move this line, move that line, do this and that to a surface, what he does, he advises on modernity, what it means, how to talk about design, the importance of design within the organisation. And that's the biggest influence he's had. So, you know, I've got an awful lot of time for Jerry and what he's achieved and the support he's given me over the years.
He's a very clear man to work for, I understand. He either likes it or hates it. And you can work with someone like that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've got nothing bad to say about him. You know, we just clicked. And I think the thing is, I've just honest from day one, and there's no airs and graces. Let's just have an honest conversation about what's happening, and that's it. And so I think we've got very similar taste in terms of design, so we just clicked.
Have you got a favorite quarter on any of these four bikes here? A moment on that bike that you think that's the bit I like best, or I think we could have done that better, or I argued against it but I was wrong?
So which bit of my children do I like the most? I think the thing that I like is the rear end of the Manx bikes, and you know,
there's nothing there.
But Sharad, one of the very senior people at TVS, challenged me to get a very distinctive rear of the bike. So I did that very quickly, and it just sort of worked straight away. And that was very much a case of inspiration, and that stuck. And I think it's so unique that it's one of my favourite parts. But saying that, they're all my favourite parts, aren't they? Let's be honest.
It's like me. I can't choose between my children. They're both equally good, and I couldn't choose between these four bikes. I look at everyone, I could make a strong case of why I would ride each one of those bikes. Simon, thank you very much indeed for this today.
You're very welcome. Thank
you. Nice to talk to you.
You too. Cheers.
Gareth Jones and Speed! Welcome to EICMA, or EICMA, as some people call it. I've come to the exhibition here in Milan, Europe's biggest motorcycle exhibition, as I understand, and yeah, it is big. I'm in Hall 18, Pad 18, Pavilion 18, 45-minute drive from the hotel, not that I was driving, I was passengered, to the venue, and it is vast, absolutely vast. The clue's in the name, you see. It's not just motorbikes and bikes, but accessories too. In fact, I'm standing in front of Amphibious dry equipment stand at the moment. Amphibious make backpacks. And if there's one thing I love more than cars, space, Slade, whales and motorbikes and rockets and Star Trek and Slade again, it's luggage. I love luggage. Luggage is where technology and fashion kind of cross over. I love a backpack, and there's a whole range of Amphibious dry equipment here designed to be slung in various places on your adventure bike. That's a fairly new term to me, adventure bike. I'd never heard that term until, 3 weeks ago, when TVS were talking about their adventure bikes, and now Norton are talking about their adventure bikes. I guess I used to own what was an adventure bike, a Tengai. That's the sort of thing that you could cross continents on. You know, lots of suspension travel, knobbly tyres, panniers, all that kind of thing, upright stance. I'm actually looking at a BMW at the moment. This is the, the R1300. That's a lot of bicycle. That is a huge... honestly, you could probably travel the whole world in that bike. I sounded very South Walian, very Cardiff, when I said the whole world. That's how they say world, isn't it? Like, here in Cardiff. Right, BMW Motorrad have a huge stand here. Let's just have a look. I've got an idea. Because, you know, most of the BMWs we know are either built by BMW or Piaggio. Or is it Piaggio or Piaggio? I don't know. But of course, TVS, the Indian motorcycle company, they build, well, in fact, they designed and build vehicles, bikes for BMW. The smaller GSs are all actually TVS bikes. Of course, the Norton stand here at EICMA is right next door to the TVS stand, and it looks very daunting. It's billed as the return, isn't it? The return of Norton, and the whole stand is completely blacked out with black curtains, and there's quite a buzz about this. As I walked into this exhibition, there are video screens with adverts for the various exhibitors here, and the Norton one was very visible. Maybe it's heightened awareness because I'm here with Norton and I noticed it, but the Norton launch is a really, really, really big thing, and I'm glad I'm here to witness it. Actually, I'm standing next to a car now, Pininfarina. I'm looking at the Battista. You may remember I went to Pininfarina a few years ago to hear about the launch of Pininfarina Automobili, Pininfarina I should say. And they've got a car park here right next to a bike. I fell on and more. Kind of an adventure bike. Here I am using that term again, with Pininfarina styling. That's nice, isn't it? Hey, a Pininfarina motorbike. That's a good idea. Fell on and more motors. I've never heard of those before. I'm guessing maybe you haven't as well, because I'm guessing you're probably more of a car person like me. Two things I've noticed since I've arrived. Number one, what's an awful lot of Czech shirts there are here at the motorbike show. I think there is a manufacturer here who sell accessories for motorcyclists, jackets, boots, gloves, hats, balaclavas, and Czech shirts. And I don't know if they're giving out Czech shirts, but there seems to be an awful lot of Czech shirts. And is everybody in the motorcycle industry in Italy Chinese these days? When I arrived, there was a huge pile of people coming in huge. We went through security, ticket check, all that. And without exaggeration, I'd say 80% of the throng coming in were Chinese. Now, there's probably two very good reasons for that. That's where the money is on this planet at the moment. And that's where construction happens at the moment. They are pushing through the car industry, the Chinese, and I'm guessing they're pushing through the motorcycle industry as well. I'm standing next to the BSA stand now. Now, BSA, exactly like Norton and Triumph. Have you noticed how I say Norton, not Norton, which is what I used to say? Got to pronounce the T, right? I'm standing next to the BSA stand, and just like them, it's a well-known British brand, which is back from the dead, still around, both of those things. Now, BSA have definitely gone for the retro vibe, right? You look at their bikes, and they look like they could have been designed in the 70s using 21st century technology. But that's not what Norton are doing. No, Norton have gone for a proper reboot. They're not obsessed with their heritage. They're using their heritage as a launch platform for new bikes. Scooters, right, KL scooters. There are lots of scooters. It's great driving around Milan today. Loads of motorbikes, loads of scooters. And that's just so Italian. But an Italian scooter these days is not your classic Piaggio or your Vespa, your Lambretta of the 60s. You know, it's a very functional, very reliable four-stroke machine these days, isn't it? Right, what else have we got going on here? Lots of helmets, John Doe, clothing, bike clothing. Do I need a new helmet? Well, if I'm going to ride these new Nortons next year, maybe I do need. I've got a motorbike helmet, but I wear it when I'm karting, and it's, what, 24 years old, something like that, 20-something years old. So I don't know if it passes the latest safety requirements, but you keep your head in it, so it's very important that it does. So if I walk away from here today having bought a helmet, you'll understand why. And if I buy a new helmet, that's the first step on a journey to being a proper motorcyclist again. But first, do a little bit of research. Going to wander around this enormous exhibition. I've still got about 45 minutes before the Norton launch. So I'm going to go and learn about bikes. Catches my eye. Oh, hello. Mernodi. They sound Italian, but are they Chinese? Smart looking, what they call A2 class bikes, around about 400cc. I'm surprised at how retro a lot of bikes are still. You just look at Harley Davidson, for instance. Everything that they do looks like it started in the 1940s, the 1950s, the 1930s. You know, they are built on their heritage, aren't they? But there are equally as many motorcycles that are thoroughly modern. Okay, I'm on the KO stand now. I'm guessing that this is a Chinese manufacturer. I really don't know the provenance of a lot of bike manufacturers, but KO, a range of lightweight enduro bikes, I would say, or scramblers, as we used to call them, motocross bikes. I don't know the full and correct terminology that they use these days, but I'm learning, willing to learn. I'm just surrounded by manufacturers whose name I don't know or have not come across before. TM Moto are right next to Sherco. Now, Sherco, I know about. They're a Spanish company who specialise in enduro and off-road bikes. And it was actually a Sherco bike that TVS ran at Dakar last year. Are they going to be there next year? Are they going to be there next year, 2026, with another Sherco or perhaps even a TVS bike? I'm hoping they are, because I'm going to tag along. I'm obsessed with the Dakar. It's brilliant. Okay, Hoto Motorcycles. Again, lots of Chinese people on the stand, so I'm guessing the Chinese have wholesale moved into bike manufacturing these days. Hello, these look a bit nice. Augusta. Oh, here we go. Augusta. We're in Italy. Brutal. Brutal. Almost predator-like. What's this? This is the Brutale. It's called the Brutale 800. Honestly, my initial reaction to looking at it was, that's brutal. And it's called the Brutale. I didn't know that. Augusta. Was it Agostini who rode in Augusta in the past? I'm not too sure on that. Not too sure. But nice to see Augusta here. I'm curious where the Honda stand is. It won't be hard to find. Honda are the biggest manufacturer of motorbikes in the world. So they'll have a stand bigger than your face, bigger than my Slade collection here. I wouldn't mind having a look at that Bosch. Yeah, you see, suppliers. It's not just bike manufacturers, but suppliers as well. Bosch provide a lot of the bits that go on to Norton bikes, as well as Brembo. I mean, they're, you know, sophisticated pieces of kit, the new Nortons. And we'll find out more about them a little bit later. I will talk to some more people from Norton and find out a little bit about the spec of the bike, because we haven't really heard about the spec of the Atlas or the Manx or the Manx R. Yes, what I do know is that the Manx R is a 1200cc bike and that the Atlas is 500 and something, and they're very different engines, but I want to know more about them. Okay, KO again. Another Chinese manufacturer, judging by all the people on the stand. Another Chinese manufacturer. Interesting. I wonder where bike manufacturing happens these days. India is a great place to build your bikes. TVS build a bike every 26 seconds in their factory in Hosur. And I would imagine the Chinese are up there as well. Hang on a minute, but Benda. An interesting name for a brand. B-E-N-D-A. I've not heard of Benda before. Unleash the Ride. They've got some very retro, futuristic bikes, rather like a Harley, really. A whole range of those. But they've also got jet skis here. And quad bikes, and the Benda quad bike, that's something to behold. I've never seen a quad bike look quite as Martian surface capable as this. Man, that has moved the design of quad bikes on to a science fiction level. Seriously. Oh, helmets, roof. Roof with a on the microphone, sorry about that. Roof. Roof. Helmets. Oh yeah. Oh, one of these roof lids. If I own that lid, which has a sort of a carbon fiber rear to its skull and very face hugging, I would look like a member of Daft Punk. Which is a good look.
Gareth Jones on speed on two wheels.
I'm on the Norton stand in preparation for the release, the launch of their whole new range of bikes. The whole stand is black, which is a very Norton colour, if you know your Norton history. Stands out from everything else here at the event, because everything else is brightly coloured and white and red and blue and gold. But the darkness of Norton does help it stand out. There are four bikes on a stage, all with black drapes over them. Now, you and I both know which bikes are underneath these four drapes, because we saw them, well, I saw them, you heard about them in last night's press preview. But right now is the bit where journalists, and here they come, 40 people, as I said, that they're taking down some of the black drapes, all come to the front. I'm going to stand near the PA because you probably want to hear some of the presentation that'll be made by some of the luminaries from Norton, including Richard Arnold, the executive director of Norton. Now, Richard Arnold, as I understand, was a man in charge of Manchester United for many years. Big player and a very, very nice chap. We had a quick word last night. Also, Simon Skinner will probably speak. Simon Skinner, I interviewed yesterday on the programme, the head of design. And Brian Gillen is probably going to speak as well. He's the CTO of Norton. So let's find out what they've got to say. Well, I know what they're going to say because I heard it last night. But here's your chance to hear it. And yeah, there's definitely anticipation here. A huge crowd. That throng of 40 journalists has now expanded to, must be over 100 journalists and punters. I'm standing right at the front of the stage, on stage left, next to the PA, so you can hear what's going on. I'm watching the screen, which is showing black and white 21x9 images with hints of colour, just tiny hints of colour here and there. But the video is entirely in black and white or grayscale. Adding to the vibe here, lots of black and silver everywhere. Now, the colour of the bikes that we saw last night, they were silver, largely silver. There was an orange bike, there was a sort of a pale green bike, but they're definitely going with the whole black and silver Norton standout colour scheme.
Good morning and welcome. As you may have just heard from TVS, the support and platform they've given us has been incredible. A global giant with an incredible reputation for quality and the very latest in technology and engineering. A quarter of a billion euros have been invested since 2021, with world-class talent working to deliver our vision. Design and product development of six new models for season 2026, but more on that shortly. A new flagship headquarters in the UK, in Solihull, with technology to equal anything, anywhere in the world. Craftsmanship, design and engineering excellence with centres in the UK, Italy and India, establishing a state-of-the-art digital customer journey, building a global network of dealerships. Norton has a history of more than 127 years, a history of groundbreaking design, innovative engineering and thrilling race victories. The resurgence of Norton is respectful to this heritage, but not held back by it. Our resurgence is based on Norton's core attributes of design, dynamism, and detail, with a vision to create the world's most desirable motorcycles. For this new era of Norton, we've given the brand a new logo, a whole new identity, which will carry the Norton name forward. To brief you on these bikes, joining me are Brian Gillen, Chief Technical Officer, and Simon Skinner, Head of Design. Together, we'd like to introduce you to the future of Norton.
Alan Towns on the Norton to beat the course record and win the double.
Since 1898, it's more than winning races. It's shaping history. More than manufactured, it's handcrafted and designed. More than engineering, it's machines with heart and soul. More than the journey, It's how you feel when you arrive. More than an individual thrill, it's a collective passion. More than moving you, it's how you're moved. It's more than a motorcycle. It's a Norton.
That video gave a feel for the overall direction we're heading in. But without any hesitation, we'd like to present our first two bikes.
The Nortons are already setting a cracking pace out in front of the field.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the Manx, and the Manx are... Please welcome the creator of these fantastic machines, Head of Design, Simon Skinner.
Thank you, Richard. We use the design strategy as our guiding light for all of our bikes. This gives us a visual continuity while allowing each bike to have its own unique character. All good design starts with proportion, giving the bike the right stance, then the surface quality, and finally the details. All of our bikes have a great stance. Modernity is forward-looking. The future is a place of inspiration and desire. Tomorrow is better than today. There are many interpretations of modernity. It is a broad church, but ours is one of reductivity. Essentially, less is more until less is less. As you can see, the main character lines of the Manx are one of forward movement to get drama, where other bikes in the category drive the vehicle into the ground with wings, pointed tails, and broken surfaces. Our execution is more effortless and sophisticated. Over to Brian, Chief Technical Officer.
Thank you, Simon. It's a huge honor and a pleasure to be here with you today to present the future models of Norton. The all-new Manx and Manx R will be among the fastest and hardest accelerating motorcycles in the world today, tuned for the road and completely at home on the track. Now, let's talk about power. The all-new 1200cc 72-degree V4 with phase pulse irregular firing order has 206 horsepower. But that's not the most important part of the story. The most important part of the story is the torque. 130 newton meters of torque, of which 75% is already available at 5,000 RPM. Why is that important? From real-world testing, with all of the data that we've accumulated, with top-level test riders on the track, on the road, we've seen that actual riders are below 8,000 RPM 99% of the time, and we want to bring that torque to the people to deliver it lower in the RPM range. Now, in order to get that torque to the ground, we designed and developed a completely brand new chassis with characteristics for very stiff longitudinal rigidity and quite a bit of torsional flex to allow us to get to the ground, get the torque to the ground in the corners, get the feedback into the rider's hands in all road and track conditions. So, to harness this power and augment the chassis control, we have one of the most advanced electronic platforms in production today, with keyless ignition, six-axis IMU, cornering ABS with RLM, controlling the lift of the rear wheel under all hard braking instances. RSC, rear slide control. That means we can give the rider the possibility to choose between different levels of slide control going into the corner. How much do you want to drift that bike when you're heading for the apex? Lean angle sensing traction control, wheelie control, launch control, cruise control that adapts when you're going through the corners on the highway, and hill hold assist. Now, with the integration of the Pirelli Supercorsa tires, with the Marzocchi electronic suspension, we are the only manufacturer with electronic suspension that has a potentiometer in the front fork. We see exactly the position of the front fork at all times. Together with the Brembo Hyper Calipers, with the advanced Bosch ABS system, we have incredible deceleration under braking. We believe that the Norton Manx and Norton Manx R are the first production sport bikes to allow all riders under hard braking to exceed 1G, the 1G barrier. So in short, we've designed and engineered the Manx and the Manx R to have class-leading torque, to have the absolute best braking performance, the ultimate handling for both the road and track, all focused to enhance the rider's experience. Thank you.
Thank you both. I think you'll all agree those are tremendous bikes. Thank you. From the first days of unpaved roads in 1898, Norton has built bikes to contend with all conditions. Par Norton's epic journey in 1921, Che Guevara's motorcycle diaries, wartime service, off-road performance has held no fear for Norton. That journey continues in the next two models we'd like to introduce. Please welcome the Atlas and the Atlas GT.
There's a video on screen at the moment telling the story of how Par Norton, as they call him, when he was 52, decided to visit his brother in Durban, South Africa. And how he rode a Norton bike all the way there, which is why Norton have the Atlas. It's an adventure bike. Please welcome the Atlas and the Atlas GT.
Everybody shuffles forward.
With the Atlas, it is clear this type of bike needs to have a very high level of functionality. Good wind protection, good tank size, high ground clearance, and a low seat height. Designing drama and forward movement into a superbike is more natural than an adventure bike. But we've done this by focusing on the reductivity and the side panel, which dominates the profile and pushes the bike down the road. The Atlas and Atlas GT are extremely capable motorcycles, and we have retained the ruggedness but executed it in a thoroughly modern and relevant way. It will come with a number of accessories to enhance this ruggedness as the customer requires. In their class, the Atlas and Atlas GT are truly unique and forward-looking. Brian.
I'll take you through some of the details. The Atlas played an extremely important role in the history of Norton. It was an emblem of British two-wheel engineering with a rugged touring spirit that appealed to many riders across the world. Now, this DNA is exactly what we have aimed to capture with the modern Atlas and Atlas GT. Powered by an all-new 585cc inline twin, lightweight, signature powertrain for Norton motorcycles. The all-new Atlas and Atlas GT
are highly advanced middleweight adventure bikes, both rugged and torquey, equally at home on both on and off-road. The Atlas and Atlas GT have several unique features. The powertrain, the broadest torque curve in its category, a distinctive sound thanks to the 270-degree crankshaft and tuned exhaust system, plasma-coated cylinder liners. This is both to reduce mass and friction, increasing performance. The chassis. The chassis is a rugged tubular steel chassis, and it's mated to fully adjustable Kayaba suspension with a remote rear spring adjuster. The braking is bi-bray with radial front brake calipers. Now, class-leading electronics platform have been adapted for this advanced suite of rider aids. Keyless, up and down quick shift, six-axis IMU, cornering ABS with RLM, cornering traction control in function of lean angle, and multiple rider modes, urban, sport touring, and off-road. All of these are accessible through the 8-inch touchscreen, which displays the same information as found on the Max Range. The Atlas and Atlas GT have been designed and engineered with the broadest spread of torque, rugged chassis, and with the most advanced suite of electronics in class. These are for real-world touring and adventure.
Thank you, Brian and Simon. These are stunning motorcycles, right? These bikes will be discoverable by a new digital journey and available through unique retail experience over 200 locations worldwide with some world-class dealer partners. Beginning in early 2026 in the UK, Italy, France, Germany, Sweden and Portugal, followed immediately by India and the USA. We have ambitions to be building 20,000 bikes each year across our six models. Welcome to the resurgence. Welcome to Norton, and welcome to history in the making. Thank you all, and please take a closer look at the bikes.
There it is. It's done. The bikes are out in the open. I can finally post pictures of these bikes on social media. It's been embargoed until this moment. And when you look at the pictures, have a look at my Twitter stream, Gareth Jones CV, and you'll see pictures of all the bikes. And of course, on the page for this episode of Gareth Jones on Speed. And they are impressive. They genuinely are. And the vibe here is good. Lots of smiles. Everybody now mobbing the bikes on stage. Hands on. They want to feel them. They want to see if they're really, really Nortons. And they really, really, really are. There's no doubt about that. And they are impressive. Hey, glad you were around to enjoy that. And I'm glad I'm here to see it too.
Gareth Jones on Speed!
Brian Gillen is the Chief Technical Officer, which I believe you are.
Absolutely. Norton Motorcycles.
For Norton. There's an awful lot of tech on these bikes. Tell me a little about it.
There's a massive amount of tech on these yeah. bikes, and both on the V4 platform as well as the twin cylinder platform, the Atlas and the Manx. Incredible technology.
Tell me about it. You've got ABS, you've got an IMU which measures position. Explain.
I'll run into that. So you're car guys, yeah. right? The fantastic thing about cars is you've always got four wheels on the ground. Your pitch and roll is basically a few degrees to the left and right, a few degrees forward and a few degrees back. With motorcycles, we've got roll up to 57 degrees when we roll into the corners, when we're coming out of the corners on the gas, and we've got pitching up to 25, 30 degrees in acceleration and deceleration. So with the Manx versions of the bikes, we have 206 horsepower, 130 newton meters of torque, meaning even in fifth gear, when you twist the throttle,
you're
it's trying to wheelie.
Yeah.
Right? So we have to keep that all under control. But control means different things to different people, right? Maybe I want my bike to wheelie. But I want to know there's a safety net that when I've got that bike wheeling at even 150, 160 kilometers an hour, I'm not going to go over backwards. But I want that wheelie. So I'm going to select the wheelie control. We don't have anti-wheeling. We have wheelie control with the level to make sure that you're in safe condition meaning we're controlling the pitch of the bike as the wheelie starts,
yeah,
and we're controlling the saturation of that angle,
yeah,
of pitch.
And you do that by limiting the power to the rear wheel. It throttles back the engine.
You're actually controlling the torque.
The torque.
You have a saturation torque, and that saturation torque is really what you're trying to control.
Right. And in lean, how does that work? When you're accelerating out of a bend, what's the IMU telling the bike?
Well, before we get to coming out of the bend, let's get going into the bend.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
With our six-axis IMU, meaning we're looking at all of the pitch, roll, and yaw of the bike. Coming into the corner, you grab the front brake, you start to downshift. At that point, you can decide you want the back end to drift. Drifting the back end out on quarter entry allows you to line up with the apex of the corner, and you can choose how much of that drift you want the bike to control.
Right.
You can have it drift out a few degrees, you can have it drift out quite a few degrees, right? Depending on what you select inside of your rear slide control in the dashboard. So you can say, I want my bike to be able to really slide going into those corners. I want to brake hard, I want the back end to come out.
Is that infinitely adjustable, or is it like three or five different
levels,
settings?
Different levels, right?
Three?
Yep, three different levels. So
right,
you choose the level that works for you.
Yeah.
When you get that bike hard braking, you pitch it into the corner, get down 55, 57 degrees of lean angle, you pick up the throttle. At that point, the bike is so far over on its side that the suspension is no longer working vertical.
Yeah.
Right? The suspension is the frame. Because if you look at the force vector coming from the wheel, it's going up, but the bike is at 57 degrees. So the amount of suspension actually controlling the grip is really limited.
Right.
That means it's the chassis flex that you have to tune.
Right.
In order to get the chassis to absorb the bumps, the ripples, and the torque you're driving to it. And then you have the IMU that's feeding that torque back in to let you pick up the grip at the mid-corner. And as you lift the bike up coming out of the corner, the traction control is reducing, because the tire contact patch is increasing, getting more torque to the ground, giving more acceleration.
It's constantly updating every, what, half a second or something?
Milliseconds.
Milliseconds.
Yeah.
This kind of technology, the first time I heard about this was when I was in India with TVS a few weeks ago. I had no idea this sort of tech was on bikes. The devices that you're using, are they derived from TVS code and architecture and software?
So the architecture that we have for the V4 is architecture dedicated to the V4.
Right.
Clearly the performance, the torque, the power that we're dealing with.
It's way above what any TVS bike has, right?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So we have to make sure that we have the algorithms and the control systems that are fast enough to manage that. When you're trying to manage 50 horsepower, you need one set of algorithms, you need one set of controls. When you're managing 206 horsepower, 130 newton meters of torque, you need algorithms that are extremely fast. With electronic controls, the trick isn't having electronic controls. It's making them unobtrusive.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What the last thing you want when you go to throttle pickup mid-corner is have the traction control pulling you back. You're asking for more, and it's not giving you more. You start lifting the bike up, and you can feel the traction control holding that power back. You want to accelerate harder. So the real trick is the algorithms and the calibration of those in order to have the most unobtrusive. It's almost like secret police. Right?
Yeah.
You want them to be there to save your ass when something's going wrong, but you don't want them telling you all the time, hey, you're running a stoplight, right?
It's like having a pair of stabilizers on your bike who are mounted up really high rather than really low.
Exactly,
yeah?
Right. That's a good analogy.
And the Atlas, you've got a bike which is designed to work on a multitude of surfaces, some with higher grip, some with lower grip.
On-road, off-road.
Yeah, and how does the software work with that?
Yeah, so inside of the software, we have the off-road mapping. So in the dashboard, you can select, for example, the touring mode, sport touring, or off-road. Now, in the off-road mode, we have completely different settings for traction control, different settings for throttle control, different settings for the torque, and also different settings for the ABS. Because when you're off-road, you need to be able to slide the back end into the corners. So when you press down on the rear brake, you want to be able to control the lock of the brake. You don't want ABS intervening all the time. So it takes ABS off in the off-road setting, allowing you to play with the bike off-road.
It's a rider's bike, isn't
absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Was that the core of what you were trying to achieve, or did you want to try and do something that no one has done before? Which was more important to Norton?
So with Norton, when you look at a Norton bike, you have to really understand the most important part of the bike, when you look at it, is missing. And that's the rider.
Yeah. The nut behind the wheel.
The nut behind the wheel. And that rider is almost 30% of the mass of that whole vehicle.
Right?
So the vehicle dynamics, the rider is the core. And how the rider reacts is what makes the bike react. So if you can have a bike that's very neutral, gives a lot of feedback to the rider, makes the rider comfortable, then the rider can start pushing harder.
We talked about software. Let's talk about the hardware, the motors. As far as I understand it, the architecture of the engines on the Manx and on the Atlas are entirely different. There is no relation whatsoever. Is that right?
Zero relation between the two. On the Manx, we have a 72-degree V4, 1200cc, and on the Atlas, we have the 585cc parallel twin.
Weren't you tempted just to sort of take a single and put it on the Atlas? It needs a twin, right?
The Atlas needs a twin. The category we want to, with the Atlas, needs a twin-cylinder engine. The power and, above all, the torque we're looking for needed a twin.
I used to ride a Kawasaki Tengai many years ago, which was a big 650 four-valve single. And I always aspired to have an Africa twin for exactly that reason.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's why you've done it. You're a bike man. You've ridden bikes your whole life?
Ridden, raced. I've raced.
You've raced?
Oh, absolutely.
I didn't know that. In Canada?
Yeah, I raced the Canadian National Championship. I raced in regional motocross races, still race in motocross races here in Europe. Road race, I raced in World Rally Championship in Tunisia, Morocco, Oman, Spain. Yeah.
I had no idea. Respect, brother.
Yeah.
Respect.
Thanks.
So, given that, if you had a choice between a Manx or an Atlas, what would be your bike of choice?
Depends on the day.
Yeah, what are you doing? Where are you going?
I've got a garage with 14 bikes, and it depends what day of the week it is and how I'm feeling that day.
And now you can add four very interesting, 100%. Very well-engineered Nortons to that list.
100%.
Brian, lovely talking to you. Thank you, brother.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Gareth Jones on Speed.
Richard Arnold, thank you very much for your time.
Pleasure, great.
How's the show going?
It's just amazing. 5 years in the build-up. The vibe around the show is obviously really, really lively, but it's just been incredible around the bikes. You've experienced it yourself. We've unveiled four bikes. They're just the works of art. The performance in them is absolutely unbelievable. And it's been absolutely killing me keeping them secret for the last 18 months.
And
not showing my mates photos. And, you know, they ride amazing. I've been really lucky. I've had a track day on all of them. And the performance is unbelievable. The Manx R, which is sort of the pinnacle bike, super sport, 1200cc V4, 206 horsepower, but 130 newton meters of torque. That thing goes like nothing I've ever seen. It doesn't just go, it stops. So it's the first production bike that's broken the 1G barrier. So every rider will get 1G stopping power out of it in terms of the braking and the interaction of the stability control forward and aft. So really, really good.
I remember when LJK Setright wrote about the Honda Prelude, which was the first car to break the 1G barrier, if I remember correctly. That was
that's
a big
four
thing.
Wheels. That's four wheels.
That's a hell of a difference,
easy,
yeah?
Yeah, easy peasy.
Yeah. Listen, your gig is essentially the business manager for Norton.
Right.
That's
right.
You were previously the business manager for Man United.
Exactly right. So I spent 16 years at United and most of that working on the commercial side. So sponsorship, digital, which was my background. So before United, I think that was black and white in those days, but before United, I worked on technology. So I worked at a company that did a lot of the interface for the Apple iPhone, did telephone banking, how voicemail worked on mobile phone networks, all of that sort of stuff. That digital side of things was what got me the job at United. And then the same here, that's really what I'm focused on, is just connecting the riders of bikes with the bikes that we're making, and they're pretty amazing.
And you are a Norton customer.
Yeah,
you've owned
a bit of an addict.
Was that the appeal of this for you?
I was saying earlier on, the very few people in the world get the chance to do something that totally absorbs them and is a complete love. And United was that every minute of every day. Even when we lost and things were hard, I absolutely loved being there. It still makes me emotional to think about the place. It's a really powerful connection to it. And I worked there, and I was just lucky, lucky every minute. To get that to happen to you twice in your life, someone smiling down on me up there, and I've got the same feeling about here at Norton. It's a lifelong love. I first got on the back of a next-door neighbour's moped, a ped as in with the actual pedals, when I was three. It was the 70s, so it's perfectly safe to do that with the plastic helmet, with the crash protection of a bucket. rode around on that and fell in love with bikes ever since, and ridden them ever since, off-road, on-road. And so I got to know the chairman of TVS through buying Norton's, and when he understood us sort of retiring from United, reached out and said, look, come and do this. And apart from being a bit knackered, if I'm honest, and needing a few weeks off, I'd jumped at the chance, and it's just been amazing ever since.
There's similarities, I suppose, between Norton as a brand and Manchester United, a very British brand that's known throughout the world, that's had its ups and downs. More ups and downs, but in the case of Norton over the last 20 years, more downs than ups. How do you turn that round? It's a complete reinvention, isn't it?
I think this comes back to TVS. So TVS, third biggest manufacturer of motorbikes in the world. They make 6 million bikes. They're the only two-wheel manufacturer to have the Deming Award for Quality, which is the Gilt Edge standard. What they don't know about making motorbikes and really high quality motorbikes, they've won 5 JD Power Awards this year alone.
Right, wow.
So the quality of the bikes they make, their ability to purchase, but it's not just that, it's look after the customers. So the ability to get spare parts somewhere by the next day is just something they take for granted. They're incredibly able logistics, looking after dealers.
Buying power as well. They Absolutely. Buy in huge volume, and that brings the cost exactly. down of any component you have to buy for Norton, right?
Yeah, and again, when you look at the bike industry over the last few years, there's a lot of European manufacturers that have struggled. Some of our competitors are making 100,000, 200,000 bikes, which is a lot. But when you compare it to 6 million, it's not. Mm-hmm. And so, many of the suppliers have worldwide relationships. We're a tier one relationship with all of the people that helped us do the clever things on the Manx R and indeed every bike. And we're getting the latest technology, and we're getting the really competitive prices because we're a big partnership. And that translates immediately into the bikes that we've got. They're still amazing. They're still really beautiful, but it means we can sustain our dealers. We've just been talking about where we live, and we're not that far apart. Our partners up in the Northwest will tell you how supportive we've been in terms of looking after dealers. And that's because we're really economically healthy as a group. TVS is the fastest growing motorbike brand in the world. It's incredibly profitable. How many motorbike companies worldwide are in that situation? That's because of the way they work. But it's not just economics. This is an organization that is multi-generational, so it's 100 years old. It's the third generation, and 35-year-old, incredibly talented man, Sudhir Bedi. He wakes up in the morning and thinks about two-wheeled vehicles. I think he probably thinks about it in his sleep if he's anything like me, but he thinks about it from the moment he wakes up to the moment he goes to sleep. How are we going to make the best bikes in the world? How are we going to look after our customers? It's all he thinks. It's what his father taught him. It's what his father taught him before. And there's something very Norton about that, if that makes sense. But that's on a global scale. It means we can be international. So we're already opening up, not just in the UK, but France, Italy, Germany, Spain, Portugal, Sweden, India, USA. And then you've been talking to new dealers from around the world here. We're going to be able to do that courtesy of the support we'll get from TVS straight away. Norton's never been able to do that.
I was going to say, the previous generation Nortons weren't type approved anywhere other than the UK?
No,
they'd
only homologated for the UK. So, and in fact, there they were a single type approval. So from that point of view, this totally transforms the opportunity for Norton. The other thing is, you've got an investor, not just with the capability, but with the commitment. This is a multi-generational family. Sudhishan would be the first to tell you, he hasn't bought this to see how it goes for the next few years. He's bought this for his grandchildren and great-grandchildren to grow this brand for years to come. So it's a 100-year commitment. And they're really, really strong behind that.
Sounds like Norton is in good hands with TVS and you and the other guys here.
No, it's a privilege and an honour to be here. And, working with Sudhishan, the Norton brand he prizes, but also there's a maniacal fervour for looking after customers, making sure that the first thing we set up when we were looking to launch internationally was a parts network. The second thing was then the training for dealers, the technical training for dealers. So before a dealer's been signed, before a bike's been shipped, we can get parts and we can get anything that needs to be looked at, set up, and then making sure that the customer is really front and center. So we designed how we're going to care for customers. If ever a bike needs to come in for service, how does that work? How do you get contacted? How do you get picked up? And we want to just be a byword. And again, that comes back, it's not just chat. They've won 5 JD Power Awards this year alone. This is a company that walks the walk on that customer service aspect, and I'm proud to work it.
I think we're going to look at some good bikes. Good absolutely. Nortons again.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I mean, these bikes are absolutely beautiful. You've seen them. I think one of the things is, because other bike manufacturers have carried on and they've pressed forward, Norton has overtaken them and jumped, not just caught up, but overtaken with the bikes we're bringing out. One of the things is this sort of, the question you'll get asked is about modernity.
Mm-hmm.
And in some people's minds, you know, a Norton is chrome. It looks like a bike from the 50s and 60s. And of course, those are beautiful bikes, but when those bikes were produced, they were the cutting edge of technology.
Yeah.
This was the first superbike. The shape was radical. Yeah. Everyone was like, well, why is the bike, yeah, that teardrop shape and all of those things. The technology that went into them was radical at the time. And so we're back to that. We're back to having not just beautiful design. I mean, you know, they need to live in your lounge in terms of just how they look. But the performance is class-leading. The torque, the braking, the handling, the technology. The quality is unbelievable, and that is a given from TVS. And then finally, just the detail. When you look at, we've got a bike next to us here, and you look at it, there is nothing on display that shouldn't be.
Yeah,
you don't
yeah.
feel like there's any bits there that are sort of just shown.
Well, this is a point I was making earlier on, looking at all the other bikes here. They show off all their pipes, all their cables, all everything. This is a minimalist, streamlined, beautiful, elegant piece of design, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the way that these bikes have been designed just changed how I saw bikes.
Yeah.
Because once you've seen what a bike looks like when it's been built really beautifully but really tidily, without the cables and pipes and labels and stickers visible, that once you've seen it without them and then you come back to it, you're thinking, why am I looking at that?
Yeah.
You know, the gubbins aren't hanging out the front of my car. Why are they visible at the side of my bike? And so it changes, I think, how you look at a bike. When you ride this thing, it changes how you feel about bike. The braking, normally on a superbike, when you're hard on the anchors, okay, Valentino Rossi, I'm sure, can hold it just on the front wheel. I'm not that good, but this bike...
Most of us aren't.
This bike makes you that good. And it takes you to the point where the back wheel is almost off, but holds it. It holds the bike flat in that position, and you slow down at 1G. It breaks the 1G barrier. But that feels completely different as a rider. It's a braking power you've never experienced before. You're almost lifting up out the seat in terms of the sensation it gives you, and that's just absolutely unbelievable. Same thing with the way the electronics, you don't notice it's doing it, you think it's you, which is a kind deception. But when you're going into the bends and you know, it allows you to control the rate that you're drifting, I haven't really experimented with that, but we, again, go back to that track day. It was just amazing to take it around the track. And it made you feel a much better rider than certainly I am. But it was amazing.
You've got a house in Rosneiger in North Wales.
That's right. Yeah.
Right. How long before you're on a Manx or a Manxar around Ynysmon, Trackmorn? You're going to be there, aren't you?
Trackmorn, you need nerves of steel, I think, as they say. But it's an amazing track there. And I think this will be great because it can be a bit wet in North Wales. You know that as well.
Very wet in North Wales.
Yeah, so I think this will help me look better than I am. But, yeah, I can't wait. And I know you were instrumental in designing the A55. That's nice. That's a nice road to stretch his legs on as long as the... Headlooth don't have a big problem with it.
Richard, thank you so much. I look forward to riding these bikes on my A55.
Can't wait to take it through.
And I'll see you on Trackmorn as well.
Absolutely. Cheers, man.
Thanks, man.
Bye-bye.
And that's it for my coverage of the Norton Motorcycles relaunch, reboot, return. I hope you've enjoyed our dip into the world of two-wheel fun over the last three episodes of Gareth Jones on Speed. There will be more from EICMA. I've recorded another episode which I'll put out at some point. But for now, that's it on bikes. We're back looking at the World Rally Championship and the latest developments in Formula One in 1 week's time. Don't miss it. See you there.
If you enjoyed this show, then please like, share, and subscribe. For information on how to contact the show, see pictures, read song lyrics, follow us on social media, or to sponsor this podcast, go to garethjones.tv. Gareth Jones on Speed is made in Wales by Whizbang.
Gareth Jones on Speed!